You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast, Advances in the Delayed Onset of Type 1 Diabetes, Strategies to Improve Awareness and Care for the Practicing Clinician. I'm joined by Dr. Anastasia Albanese O'Neill, Associate Vice President for Community Screening and Education with Breakthrough T1D, formerly the JDRF. She is here to discuss the importance of screening for type 1 diabetes.
Thank you for having me with you today.
It's so great to be focused on this topic, which is really kind of a brand new thing. So let's talk about screening and when did it start and how?
Well, you know, it's funny that you should describe it as brand new, because actually screening for type 1 diabetes has been around a long time in the research space. In fact, all the way back to the 1980s. And for 20 years now, I think the anniversary either was or is going to be coming up very soon, an organization called TrialNet has been screening relatives. So first degree relatives, parents, siblings, and kids, and then second degree relatives, aunts and uncles and cousins and nieces and nephews for these type 1 diabetes autoantibodies. What's new is that this has transitioned now into clinical care. So that is the big change. Why was TrialNet screening for all of these years? They were looking for a way to delay the onset of type 1 diabetes and the need for insulin, or to prevent that altogether. And that's the purpose of that research study group.
Tell us about TrialNet.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been screened through TrialNet. So have a bunch of my family members. TrialNet is a research network. So their primary goal is to conduct research studies, but you can't just do it in one place. You can't just do it in Miami or Denver or Seattle. You've got to have a network of researchers working together, because type 1 diabetes still is relatively rare. What are they looking to do? A number of things, but specifically related to screening. They're looking to find people early in type 1 diabetes before insulin is required. And they do that by detecting autoantibodies in the blood, which show that an immune attack is underway on the insulin-producing cells in the pancreas. They have over the years recruited people to participate in studies, testing different therapies and ways they can halt that immune attack and, again, delay that need for insulin. And these are really the best investigators in the United States and around the world, frankly. So really great study network to help us move the science forward.
And let's go back to the autoantibodies. Tell us about them in terms of what they're showing, how many are we looking for, and how complicated is it to test for them?
Yeah, well, let me take the autoantibodies first. That's a great question. It's a new word for a lot of people, autoantibodies. You know, Breakthrough T1D has been involved in research to identify these autoantibodies for decades. We are looking specifically for four of them. I won't get into the details of what their role is in the immune attack of the insulin-producing cells in the pancreas, but the bottom line is we want to test and see if these are present. If you have one that's present, you're at an increased risk. But if you have two or more that are present persistently, what we now know, and again from research done for decades, is that people with two or more persistent autoantibodies, they are very likely to progress to a diagnosis of type 1 diabetes over their lifetime. And so we want to test the blood either by pricking the finger or doing a blood draw using phlebotomy to get a small sample of blood and test for these four autoantibodies.
Well, who should be tested? I think there's a common misperception that hopefully you can address that diabetes is a only genetic condition.
That's a great question. So there is a genetic risk for type 1 diabetes, but most people who are even at a high genetic risk for type 1 diabetes do not progress to requiring insulin and never develop autoantibodies. In fact, almost 95% of people with an increased genetic risk. So autoantibodies are important because they tell us that an immune process is underway. They actually tell us that the immune system has made a mistake. It's attacking the person's own insulin-producing cells. Who should be screened? Well, a lot of the research has focused on family members, as I mentioned. And the reason is because if you have a family member, a first-degree relative, so a mom or a dad or a sister, brother, or a child with type 1 diabetes, your risk is 15-fold people in the general population. But Another fact that sits alongside that is that 85% of people have no family history. That was the case in my own family. And so if over time we only limit screening to people with a family history, then we're going to miss approaching 9 out of 10 people who will eventually be diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. So the focus now is on screening family members as we build healthcare capacity to get to those larger numbers of people in the general population.
I have 3 grandchildren, and after working on this project, I've suggested to my daughter-in-law that she have the kids screened. There's no history of type 1. Why is that an important thing for people even with no family history to consider?
Yeah, I'll take that question. What I'd like to do is describe the benefits of screening. And what we like to do at Breakthrough T1D is categorize these benefits into 4. The first is an immediate clinical benefit that we have identified through research over the past 20 to 30 years. And that is that we can reduce the risk of a very serious complication of type 1 diabetes called diabetic ketoacidosis, or DKA, at diagnosis if we screen and monitor individuals. And those numbers are not small improvements in the reduction in risk of DKA. They are big reductions in the risk of DKA. For example, we can, if we screen and monitor, we have data from the United States, from Germany, from Australia, from all over the world, we can get that number down to less than 3%. Right now it's at 50% in the United States. And I will tell you, having as a parent experienced a diagnosis that included severe DKA, it's traumatic, it's exhausting, and it gets you off on a very difficult start, not only emotionally, but also for the child or adult metabolically. So really, this is a true immediate clinical benefit that we can realize now.
You said there were 4.
Yes, sorry. Thanks for prompting me. So there are more. The second thing is, and I've mentioned TrialNet, we now have a drug that's FDA approved, and I'm happy to say more about that later, that can delay the onset of type 1 diabetes on average for a little bit longer than 2 years. 2 years is a long time to not have to take insulin to manage your diabetes. But we also have other studies in the pipeline right now, both in the early stages of type 1 diabetes before you require insulin, and 5 studies recruiting right now at diagnosis that we want people to think about. Most of these studies that you have to enroll in at diagnosis, you've got to do it within 100, 120 days. If you're in the ICU like I was with my daughter, it is not a good mental state in which to make a decision about research participation. So we want people to screen so they can think about, what's my plan? Am I gonna talk to my doctor about a therapy? Am I going to consider research? Am I gonna learn more about type 1 diabetes? So the 4th benefit is that time to plan and prepare. So it's those 4: reduced risk of DKA, the ability to participate in research and contribute to the science, talking with your doctor about FDA-approved therapies, and finally, that planning time. Those are the 4 benefits that we have a lot of evidence about, and that's what we want to communicate to people about when they're on the fence. Should I screen? Should I not screen? Yes, you should. I mean, we've screened through research, and let me just add this last fact, and then I'll give it back to you. But through research study, we've screened about 300,000 Americans. 300,000. There's probably 15 million relatives of people out there with type 1 diabetes. We would love them to learn more, think about these benefits, talk with trusted family members and their doctor, and then consider raising their hand and stepping forward, because it helps us move the science forward to new breakthroughs.
Is screening only available through TrialNet?
It's not actually. So TrialNet is for family members. I can list the specifics if you'd like. There's another research program that we fund here at Breakthrough T1D, and that's a program called ASK. This program is called Autoimmunity Screening in Kids. And the additional benefit here is you also can have your child screened for celiac disease, which sometimes co-presents with type 1 diabetes. This is for any child ages 1 to 17 years old in the United States. They'll send a kit to your house, or you can go to a lab and have the blood drawn. So again, this would be for people, as you mentioned, you've got 3 grandkids. This would be for people who don't have a family history but are curious about screening.
Perfect. That's amazing to have it sent to your house too. That makes it so convenient. Let's talk about the results of the screening in terms of understanding where you are on the continuum of type 1 diabetes.
In October, we have heard from CMS that they're going to put out some new diagnosis codes, the ICD-10 codes that are used in clinic to code what your diagnosis is. And for a long time, the codes were specific to what we now call stage 3 type 1 diabetes. That's when you have symptoms. If you haven't been diagnosed yet, you're very thirsty. You have frequent urination. You're probably losing weight. You might have blurred vision, especially in adults. And you feel overall pretty crummy. And if that progresses too far, you can end up in the hospital again in DKA. That is now what we call stage 3 type 1 diabetes. There are two stages before that. The first one is stage 1, so they're easy to remember. Stage 1 is when you have 2 or more persistent autoantibodies. So if you get one test back and it's positive, don't make any decisions yet. You need to do confirmatory testing on a different blood sample. But if you come back with 2 or more persistent autoantibodies, then you would be classified into what is stage 1. Your blood sugars are completely normal. You have no symptoms, but we can see in your blood, again, that autoimmune attack of the insulin-producing cells in the pancreas. If you progress, if more of those cells are destroyed by that immune process, if you continue to test positive for 2 or more autoantibodies, and we start to see what we call dysglycemia, or changes in glucose levels or blood sugar levels outside of the target range, what we call the reference range in clinical speak, then you are classified as stage 2. And most of our studies are in stage 2, and most of our ability to intervene and our only ability to intervene clinically right now is in stage 2.
Great. Which is a beautiful segue into talking about that therapy.
Yes. So there is an FDA approved therapy that was approved in 2022. It's called teplizumab MZWV. It is indicated per the FDA label for children and then adults, people who are 8 years and over. And it's a monoclonal anti-CD3 antibody that is delivered via infusion, via IV infusion.
How does it work? Do they have to get it all the time, or how actually is it delivered?
Yes, it's infused through 14 separate infusions over 14 days, and it's done once.
And you mentioned it, but just to go over it again, what did the major study that led to its approval show?
Yeah, so the major study, or what we call the pivotal trial, was TN10, which stands for TrialNet, and it was their 10th study of this therapy. And what it showed was that it delayed the onset of type 1 diabetes on average by 2 to 3 years in people who received the therapy.
That is very exciting. And so if you talk to parents and you tell them that we now have this therapy and they still say they don't want their kids screened, what's going on there?
I think screening is a very individual decision. And I think our goal is to ask people to learn more, to build awareness, and to educate them about the opportunities, the benefits, and the pathways, how you would get screened. And I didn't mention that you can get screened in your doctor's office, so we can talk more about that if we have time. But I think especially for parents who live with type 1 diabetes or already have a child with type 1 diabetes, as you can imagine, these are very emotionally laden decisions. And as a parent myself of a child with type 1 diabetes, I have another child. I think we all as parents feel worry and guilt and concern. Was it my fault as a parent that caused my daughter's type 1 diabetes? All of these feelings are real, are valid, and are really important. And so what people need in addition to getting screened and getting a result is getting education, is getting psychological support, especially if they come back with a positive result. The good news, 95% of family members are going to come back with negative test results. Over 99% of people who have no family history are going to come back with negative results. So they're not going to have autoantibodies. But for the percentage of people who do, we really need to make sure that we care for those individuals by providing education, a very clear plan of care for monitoring, and psychological support and community so that they do not live alone with their distress and anxiety around the results of this testing.
Now, most of our audience is healthcare providers, many at the primary care level. What is your message for them around the issue of screening?
Yes. So my message is learn more about type 1 diabetes screening. You can look to the standards of care from the American Diabetes Association. I can also share, because it's in press, that we have forthcoming monitoring guidelines that will guide the primary care practitioner as well as specialty care practitioners. And how do we care for these individuals who are in these early stages of type 1 diabetes? This work was convened by Breakthrough T1D, but what I can tell you is we've had participation internationally, representation from four continents, 11 different countries. It is a true international consensus. And what I am most delighted about is it really focuses on making sure, again, that clear plan of care is in place for individuals who have autoantibodies, are in these early stages, so they really do realize the benefits of their participation in screening, and they get the care they need and support.
That's exciting. We'll look forward to reading those guidelines and getting them into clinical practice. I want to thank you so much for your time, Anastasia. It was fascinating, and I think hopefully all of our people listening learned a lot about the importance of screening. And those of you listening, I'm hoping that you'll join us for another episode in this series. We have four other podcasts. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. In support of improving patient care, MedLearning Group is jointly accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, and the American Nurses Credentialing Center to provide continuing education for the healthcare team. And I want to give a special thank you to our supporter, Sanofi US, who provided an educational grant for this activity.